Welcome to Real Stories, a show that has honest conversations from the heart. I invite you to sit back, relax, and allow our guests to speak their truth.
Hello, I'm Taylor, the communication doctor, and welcome to Real Stories. I just want to say, I come from a family where people didn't always speak their truth. And I think it's so important to speak their truth. And every day I meet people who, because of society, are just walking with that facade because they feel that it is the way to be. And in Real Stories, I want people to know the real story behind the facade. And that is why I do what I do. Hello, this is Real Stories, and I'm your host, Tanya the Communication Doctor. And today on my show, I have Rhys Thomas. Hello, Rhys.
Hi, Tanya. Thank you so much for inviting me on. It's a real pleasure to get to talk to you one-on-one and also to share some of my real story.
Oh, brilliant. I'm really excited. I'm always excited for Real Stories. And I just want to introduce you in terms of your title, because you are the founder of True Self Leadership. Now, could you just let my audience know, not True Self Leadership, sorry, True Self Coaching. Let my audience know a little bit about what that is and what you do from the perspective of True Self Coaching.
Yeah, of course. So True Self Coaching. So there are two sides to the business. There's the True Self Coaching, which is kind of like a one-to-one personal development, consciousness expansion, mindful innovation is the word I come up with for that kind of in-depth, you know, working through limiting self-beliefs, that sort of thing, and also diving more into more spiritual woo-woo type of thing if people want. And then the other side of it is more corporate leadership development, which I call conscious leadership. So that has seven principles that I came up with that I think are important for leaders to think about as they try to future fit their organization, especially now. I mean, I worked in leadership development consulting for a bit, and then during this pause that we've all been having, I was able to really dive a little bit deeper into that and understand what was really going to be making the difference for companies post COVID. So there were seven things. They all begin with C, don't ask me why. Connection, co-creation, cultivation, caring, communication, curiosity, and community. So they all have varying degrees of importance. Essentially, it's about putting humans first or people first in your organization. But then beyond that, it needs to be about how you can future fit the organization to attract and retain the best talent, but also to adapt to this kind of VUCA environment that we find ourselves in, even more so than when I first sort of came up with the idea. So that's a brief idea of the two things that I'm doing. Maybe we'll go into that in more detail as we continue with the questions, or would you like me to?
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. Yeah. And I want to dive in deep into the curiosity at the C's, because, you know, this is Real Stories. And I'm curious to know a little bit more about you in terms of your journey into self-development, because I do feel that you don't just jump into self-development. There's a process, and normally there's something that you've gone through that has led you in that direction. So I'm going to go into challenges straight away and ask you, you know, what kind of challenge did you have first? Were you kind of the first point in your life you thought, oh my God, you know what, I need to wake up or I need to take another road?
Yeah, so it's not an easy one, but I'll just go back a couple of steps. And my previous life was just kind of like living day to day, enjoying that. It was all about the experiences. I always wanted to have the most full life. I've lived and worked in different countries. I've done lots of different jobs, but mostly around sort of recruitment and sales. And lived in London for a few years, lived in Australia and Sydney and Melbourne, lived in France for a year. And then about 6 years ago, actually, just recently happened, anniversary, my wife was pregnant. It was something that we didn't really expect. It wasn't planned, but it was kind of obviously a very joyous experience. And throughout the pregnancy, everything was fine. And then it got to about 30 weeks. She was in hospital for sort of pretend, perhaps preeclampsia idea, and she was being monitored. It was all fine. I was going to see her every day, and then, you know, the unexpected, most terrible thing happened. She had they later found out it was a placental abruption. It meant she had to be rushed to surgery. They didn't really rush quite as quickly as they should have, which was particularly difficult. But essentially, we lost our daughter. It was, you know, beyond words kind of thing, how to try and deal with that. My wife got ill as well after that. You know, often with these emergency cesareans, they have, you know, medical consequences. She had a sort of blood clot, and they went into a pulmonary embolism. So it was a very, very difficult sort of 2 or 3 months, and it kind of left us both a bit numb, and we took a lot of time to try and get over that. But once you kind of let go of the sort of the anger and the hatred that you had towards maybe the doctors or whoever, you know, the blame, maybe hatred is too strong, but, you know, the blame and the anger that you had, and let go of that and try to move forward and see that as a this awakening, this learning process. And yeah, it took a lot of time, and I was kind of the crutch, the, you know, the typical stiff upper lip Brit guy who was there just to, you know, hold a hand and make sure everything was okay, and didn't really give myself enough time to grieve through it properly. She was obviously dealing with quite a lot of physical and emotional and psychological issues as a result of what happened, and then what happened after that. So it took a couple of years, and we kind of said, well, do we want to try again? And we decided we would, and we took some time out from the UK and went and lived in France for a year. just pretty basic sort of simple life, living in a house belonging to her parents. They wanted to sell it up, so we said we'd go over and, you know, do up the garden and do up the house and so they could sell it, basically. But as a result of that, she got pregnant again, and we now have an incredible 2.5-year-old daughter, Camille, who is my everything, really. I've been taking on a sort of stay-at-home dad role for the last, I don't know, maybe 18 months. I think she did the first 9 months. I was going to do the second 9 months. And then I started diving back into the work that I told you about when she started nursery. And then obviously she hasn't been at school for about 3 or 4 months now. So I've kind of reverted back to full-time parenting. So, but, you know, yes, it has its challenges. Yes, it has its tribulations, but it's been that extra spark to rekindle that initial awakening process that, you know, so often is caused by trauma, and it lay dormant for a bit. But, you know, being able to be with her, and you mentioned curiosity, that's one of the things, that childlike inner child association, that being in that parenting role at that sort of such an interesting age, from sort of 9 months to now, she taught me so much about connecting with that curiosity, that joy, that creativity, all the kind of things that maybe I'd forgotten, or perhaps had been certainly squashed after our traumatic experience. So that is a long-winded answer, probably not what you're expecting me to say.
No, but, I never have an expectation, because I don't know. That's what it is. I just want to, first of all, I want to say sorry for your loss, because I was just kind of allowed you the space to speak just then, because obviously when you're talking from that place, it's just, I didn't want to stop you. So I'm sorry for your loss, first of all, because I know that's a really hard thing to go through. When you get to that stage, and what's lovely is you've both come together, you and your wife, through it, because some people can part through it because of understanding from a different, as I always say, men are from Mars, women are from Venus, so we're so different in terms of the way people process. So it's so beautiful that you managed to still maintain that relationship and move to France, and now you've got a beautiful daughter, you know, 2.5. And so I just want to say, I mean, that within that kind of, let's say, trauma, there is light again, and that's amazing, that light that's come through it, and that light is your daughter. And I love the fact that you said that, because it's so often, isn't it, the whole stay-at-home mum, or the creative, like the creativeness comes out in you when you are, you know, when you're in that stage, or when you are in that stage of, okay, she's 2.5. But you sound a bit like me, Reese, in terms of, okay, I want to do something extra. I want to do something more. I want to give back. And that's what I'm kind of getting from you. So just tell me a little bit of the beginnings of, because you said you know, you started the true self coaching after kind of, you know, realization and having this time with your daughter. So was there kind of, what was the light bulb moment?
Well, yeah. So essentially me being at home with my daughter, it was about 18 months when I first started going onto LinkedIn. And for one, it was just a kind of a need for some kind of adult conversation or input from, you know, as lovely as she was at age, there was only so much that we could really kind of interact with and then communicate. So it was a wanting for that to, you know, read something to stimulate my intellectual mind, shall we say. Mm. And then going from there into posting and meeting new people and learning more about the personal development side. So I've always been a big fan of learning and reading, and that was what put me on this path. And I met many amazing people through LinkedIn, coaches and spiritual people, whoever it might be, and they all kind of were always welcoming and accepting and generous with their time and their knowledge. And that was a big step, and I think again that's partly due to her giving me that space. And you know, she'd have her little naps and I'd have an hour or something to quickly dive on, or maybe write a post or do something that I was keep fulfilling me in that kind of space where I was desperate to do more, as you said, but at the same time I was obviously restricted with my time. So that evolved. It turned into the true self coaching. I met Teresa and we started our podcast as well. We both have a kinship for emotional intelligence and also for leadership development. So that's kind of the basis for where our podcast came from, which is nearly about a year now. Since September will be a year, which is quite amazing.
Wow.
So as that evolved, the coaching kind of came up. But as I was saying to you earlier, the idea of coaching has a kind of, for most people, has this idea, preconception in people's idea of what a coach is. For me, especially, I associate with a kind of sporting track and field, that kind of mentality of, you know, do X, Y, and Z 3 times a day, every day, and this is the result. And for me, that was never really what I saw myself helping people with. You know, I said learning was one of my values, but making a difference is the other one. And whilst I've been really involved and invested in that learning piece, making the difference was the bit that I think probably came out of what happened with the trauma, and then having that learning, relearning opportunity, remembering opportunity by spending time with Camille, made me really want to honor that, that value. And I guess it's only natural for a parent to have that compulsion to, you know, want to make a difference or make a better future for their children. So I think those things all came together to lead me towards this. But the coaching, the word itself, you know, I toyed with consultant, and obviously the two sides of the business, there's a kind of leadership consulting group coaching type of idea, training and development, workshops, facilitating that sort of thing. And then there's the one-to-one personal stuff. So I prefer that, the word, like a guide, like a transformation guide, that sort of thing. But I know that some people, it's really tricky. You want to be true to your own self, but you also want to also be viable to people in the market, and you know, coach seems to be the word that was most popular and getting the results. So true self coaching was born.
That's so funny, actually, because like you said, I love your reference in terms of coaching being like tracking, because it is, isn't it? And when you're taught, the people that are certified coaches, when you're going through that process and you're taught to be a coach, there is all these things about goal setting, you know, staying on track, accountability. And I suppose you just have to find your balance, because I know me, with regards to goal setting, sometimes I felt like when I was working with people, when I became a coach first, was there was setting, I felt there was too much unrealistic goals. And then I had to step back and look from it from an organic, because I prefer that word, the organic perception, in terms of allowing things to grow naturally. And you also mentioned spirituality and finding your values to make a difference. And I wanted to lead on to my next question, which is, if you kind of, because with regards to spirituality, do you have like a mindful practice or something that helps you to stay clear about what you're doing and helps you from a perspective of when you're working with other people to kind of keep that balance yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So just just quickly, you talk about the goal setting bit. For me, you know, there's always a space for that, and I understand the importance of it. And depending on the person you're speaking with, it might be more or less relevant. But for me, I the idea of intentions and goal setting, it almost seems like you're setting boundaries. You're placing yourself in a kind of box. And for me, I'd much rather go with the flow and follow the, you know, wherever the energy is taking us with the conversation, and use that. I like you said organic. That's exactly how I see it, you know, evolving. And it's not about me saying this is the path we're going. It is literally you're shining a light for them to see. You're holding up the mirror. You're being that soundboard for them to voice things that maybe they wouldn't voice to other people. You have that one degree of separation, so you're not, you know, the things that you obviously share things with your nearest and dearest, but maybe some things you feel uncomfortable sharing with. Whereas that's where a coach is a sort of almost an anonymous sort of extra person or another voice, or rather just a set of ears to listen to sometimes. Mm, sometimes, yeah. Listening is what you need to do. But I think I've gone off on a tangent there from what your question was.
About mindful, I was asking you about your mindful practice that keeps you sane. No, that's fine. No, it's fine, because we were talking about the coaching and growing organically and what you just said. So I love that. And you're right. I like the way you put it in terms of, you said, you know, you're setting a boundary for yourself if you are setting so many goals. I like that terminology. But yeah, mindfulness.
Yeah, mindfulness is another one of those things that I learned a lot about. Emotional intelligence, self-awareness, and mindfulness, they were like the holy trinity of things. And EQ is something I learned loads of from Teresa. Self-awareness is something that I've just learned organically. There were a few other people who are probably in Humans First as well, who have always been important about developing that. And I think it's Brian Kelly first told me that, you know, the art of coaching, the most fundamental thing is about awareness, self-awareness. And you start from there, then you can go wherever you might lead. But the mindfulness leads me to meditation. I know that isn't specifically wholly only, that's not the only thing that mindfulness is. And Shelley, my friend, will probably be wringing her hands when she hears this, but it led me to practice of meditation. It was something that I'd toyed with in the past, but never really committed to it. But I'd always felt compelled that it was something that would help me. And I think it was a bit before the lockdown happened, probably end of February, I started, and I've pretty much been doing it every day since then. I missed maybe the one or two days, but there are various forms of it. And I've, you know, delved further into that spiritual side of it, whether it's transcendental, whether it's vipassana, or whether it's, you know, mindful meditation. These are all things that I'm learning. So I've ditched the books, and I've I've ditched that. That's not true. I do still read, but I ditched the compulsion to look outside for the answers and to be controlled by the intellectual mind, and the compulsion to know and let go of that, and realize that it's more about the feeling and the heart-centered intuition, which is helping me grow personally, but also with my potential clients, and from this expanding this idea of conscious leadership, and that links with this kind of the seven things. Community was the last one that I did, but now it's kind of almost the number one because I want to talk about the importance of sustainability and the regenerative business kind of thing, and then creating that egalitarian ecosystem, as a phrase someone gave me the other day, about, you know, there are things in nature that are important, and then they've given us this cycle. And there's someone, I can't remember his name, the guy Hitchens, something like that, he talks a lot about future fitting and regenerative business practices, and he talks about the divergence and the convergence. So something you see in nature, and it's about being able to combine both of those things. So like the divergence is about, you know, the inclusivity, the creativeness, the empowering self-organization, and the convergence is about that kind of purpose-driven, value-driven, soul-based culture. I mean, that's kind of pretty much his words, but that is something that I'm really feel compelled to progress further and really incorporate into what I'm doing in this idea of conscious leadership. So it's gone beyond that idea of just humans first, people first, and I've spoken to Mike and Gary and people like that about this, and we had a conversation about how the bottom line, the profit was always a priority in that kind of traditional hierarchy structure, command, and purpose is obviously important. And I was like, well, you know, if you make people your purpose, that'll take care of the performance, the engagement, the production, and you know, the profit will ultimately be there as well. So that sort of thing, combining all of this into a sustainable, regenerative, conscious way of living, of being, of a collective, co-creative sort of community organization. I mean, I know it's not a very popular thing, but a kind of almost flat structure organization where everyone is valued, a round table scenario, and that's where the cognitive diversity idea comes from as well. And I use caring because some people are uncomfortable with the real word is love. So love is a huge thing, and I've written articles about that, and it's something that has become very much part of my spiritual process. And I can go into that a bit more if you want.
No, I love it. There's so much there. I was just letting you talk because, you know, it sounds to me like you have been doing so much work in terms of your whole self-growth. And I love your reference when you know, what I really resonate with when you mentioned, you know, profit, because I mean, that gets me when I sometimes get those, you know, those messages in LinkedIn about money or about creating this six-figure sum business and all the rest of it. And it's so funny when you say, you know what, I didn't go into business for money. Because people think, what, are you crazy? But I did actually, and I'm in the process of creating another level to my main business to become a social enterprise ethos. Because yes, of course you need to earn money, but that's not the focus. And I think when that is the focus, that energy carries through, and then karmically, I think it kind of comes back to you. But I love what you said in terms of the connection with people and connecting with people, and everything that you're doing, and connecting from the perspective of meditating as well. And I do believe when you meditate or you put out to the world what you want, or you, if you're someone who does affirmations, or you tell the universe and you're clear of the universe about what you want, my personal experience, I've had experience in that actually, it does work, it does happen. And it sounds to me like you're on that path as well. And it's like, because when it does, when you do ask the universe for something and it literally happens and they give you a sign, you're like, wow, this is real. How long does it take me to realize this? But I think naturally we do as children. I think children naturally do that, and you can learn so much from children. You know, and then as you get older, you shut it down because you're looking, as you said, you're looking at external things, aren't you? Rather than internally. But when you start looking from within, you start seeing what it is that you really want, or what's important to you. And, you know, so that's really, 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 really powerful. But before I bring it to a close, Reese, I wanted to ask you, like, because you talked about your mindfulness practice, your meditation, and I know you're a lover of music. Actually, let's throw that in, because I know you're a lover of music. Because I feel mindfulness is music as well. So for me, sometimes if I get a chance to just listen to a piece of music, that is the most mindful thing for me. Because sometimes I meditate every morning, but for me, mindfulness is more than just sitting down and in a quiet space and meditating. It could be sometimes just walking in the park or listening to a piece of music. So what's your favourite track? What's your favourite track? What's your go-to piece of music that you kind of feel like relaxes you?
It's very eclectic, my music sense, and to be perfectly honest with you, it varies from day to day, but it used to be a big part. I used to you know, listen to Classic FM because it was something that was really inspiring and uplifting, and it's emotional and it kind of gives you all of those things, but also it kind of gives you that free space in your head to be thinking but also appreciating but also listening, and whereas sometimes, you know, a traditional song, you're too busy thinking about singing along to the words or something like that. And I find that is quite, that emotiveness is important. But at the same time, I remember I did one of the Humans First thing. I think I had one classical song on there, and I had a a crazy disco-y Elton John love song, which is always one of my favorites. That one, the Queen one, Don't Stop Me Now. These kind of really uplifting power sort of songs. But I also, I love singing along to any kind of love power ballads, anything like that. 80s music is cool because it's kind of, it's not quite what I grew up with, but it kind of is. And I can pretty much love and appreciate most music, all forms, really. My wife is a really good pianist, so it's quite nice to always have that music going in the background sometimes in the house.
I love that. I love that. And I, in my head now, I'm just kind of singing, "Don't Stop Me Now." I'm in a moment now. So that's brilliant because it's just one of those things, really, with music. It's so powerful, really, and so inspirational. Yeah. And I even think in workshops, because I'm like you, I use music. And if I do a workshop, if we ever get a chance to do live, there's always music on when I do a workshop. And that's just really key and important. But what's your kind of biggest kind of inspiration? It could be a thing, it could be a person. What really inspires you and feeds your soul?
Well, right now, I mean, it's interesting you said about, you didn't get into business to make money, and that was kind of what it was. It was really a personal journey. It was an exploration. It was, there's a Zen Buddhist thing about Satori the other one, you basically go look for enlightenment through pain or trauma, or you look for it through learning. What it is now. I was just doing that, and I used LinkedIn as a way to kind of share what I learned. And it was always a case of, well, hey, I've learned this cool thing. I want everyone else to know about it. And it wasn't a case of me trying to boost my followers or get new business or anything like that. And it got to that point where I was like, well, I'm kind of invested in this, but if I want to continue it, maybe I need to make a little bit of a business savvy out of it, or you make some revenue from it. So turning it into a coaching and consulting thing seemed like a natural process. But now I've gone more into that spiritual side, and I went quite far into the woo-woo side. One was a lady who from America who used to be in Humans First. I don't think she's there anymore, but she's always into sort of clairvoyancy, channeling, all this kind of stuff. And she took me to some groups, and even like light language, I don't know if people know aware of that, but that's like pretty much level 10 on the woo-woo scale. But it's all really, really inspiring and interesting. But as I've always been, it's been an eclectic approach. So at the moment, I see myself as the work that I'm doing and the thing that I want to add value on, make a difference is through speaking and through doing events and that sort of thing. That was always my vision and what I thought my purpose was. Doing the podcast is great, and getting a chance to come onto other people's and share that experience is part of that learning process and stepping into that new role. And I don't know if you know who Ram Dass is. Ram Dass, I've been listening to a lot of his old lectures and things from 70s, 80s.
Chatting and I'm listening to you, and something started to tickle off those flowers or whatever. Yes, but go for it. Sorry.
I'm just diving into these kind of more older school spiritual things that I don't know if you know spiritual guru Radhanath Swami.
He's very into
Bhakti yoga, and that's something that I'm exploring now, because I said before, love being that universal frequency that is the kind of thing that I believe we all can tap into that a bit more and adopt that more unconditional approach to everything. We'd all, everyone would all get along a little bit better. But he's really inspiring. And there was a story that I heard him tell with Jay Shetty on one of the shows recently. I've heard it before. I don't know if you want me to share that with it. Are we coming to the end now, or you've got more?
Yeah, go for it. I love your references to yoga as well and that kind of thing, because I mean, I'm a great lover of yoga as well. I love Kundalini. That's one of some of my favorite practices. And so come on, share away.
Yes, well, just as you mentioned yoga there, like I was always just, it's just that, thing that people do in spandex and bend and for me. But the real meaning of the yoga is like union, and there are so many types of yoga that you can do to have that union with, consciousness or whoever it might be, or universal, the one, or whatever you want to call it. But God. So anyway, he was he was in California in the Redwood forests with a friend. They were walking there. It's a very sort of spiritual place. You know, some people say it's like being in a sort of, you know, nature's cathedral type of thing. And you're walking through and these giant trees, they were, you know, amazed at how big they grow, how old they are. And they came across a ranger who was there, and he was chatting to them, and he could see that they were interested. And he said, look, you know, they asked, how do they survive? Because it's quite a harsh environment, you know, it's very prone to earthquakes and that kind of thing. And the soil quality there isn't brilliant. Like, how do these giant trees grow so big and live so long? And he's let them in on a secret that they, unlike normal trees, the roots don't grow down. They don't go down, down, down. They grow out. So the smaller trees, the older trees, the roots grow out until they literally become interconnected. They kind of support one another, and it makes them stronger together. It helps them kind of withstand any of these dramas and things that they face. And he related this to, you know, how a human species is similar. And if they could just learn to be more connected through, you know, through their hearts, through kindness, through compassion, and reminded us that, you know, that unity is our real strength, and it will help us weather any storm. So I think it was a really, I've heard it from an ecological story, that idea, before, but when he told it to me, when he told it, I really connected with it, because it was from a few years ago, but it's so relevant to now. And I remember you mentioned something about, you know, your recent podcast or shows about George Floyd and that sort of thing. It just seems like that message of interconnectedness and realizing that we're all so much better if we can connect as one, rather than
totally
that separation. You know, we kind of, the intellectual mind tells us to be separate, that individualism idea, the ego driven kind of thing. And it was really only when I started to acknowledge that and release that, and accepting that it was there, but it didn't need to be, you know, the driving force, and surrendering that kind of ego trip that I'm sure all of us have been on at some point, and some of us probably still are, but surrendering that and realizing that it was more of that heart-centered, intuitive answer and feeling, and using that as the way to connect with each other and have that connection and interconnectedness, interdependence, whatever word you want to call it, but stronger together, basically.
that's so beautiful, Reese, you know, to connect. You said connect through kindness and compassion, and, you know, I think if that's a great mantra to have, isn't it, really, just in life, and when we see the world in that way, you know, it's that's what it's all is about, really, isn't it? Being able to connect with people on a deep level through kindness and compassion, then that the world would be so much of a better place, isn't it, really? But absolutely, there's so much of these ups and downs, and it's so much of a journey to get there, to live it, because it's almost like that you could say they're just words, but it's actually to live those words. Yeah. It's a process, isn't it? And I think it's a process that doesn't stop, because there's always moments where you hit bumps, you know, and there's always moments where it's like totally constantly checking in with yourself and saying, you know what, this is about connecting with people and having that kindness and compassion. So that's a beautiful way, I think, to bring the show to a close, Reese. I love it. I love talking to you today. There's so much there. There's so much knowledge, and I kind of feel like, it's really interesting on social media, because sometimes I feel like you're on your journey with that person, because you're because you are somebody who does share. I would describe you as somebody who is just a natural teacher, because you're sharing your knowledge. You're not keeping it to yourself. You know, you're out there, you're sharing your knowledge with the world because you believe in something better. And that's kind of how I see you. So thank you so much for coming on today and for sharing your experience and being so open about your journey. And now, you know, moving
thank you
forward.
For having me. It's been a real pleasure to have a little time one-to-one, and even more excited now to repay the favor when you'll be joining me on my show in a few weeks' time, I think. Yeah, so exciting. Thank you.
We're going to switch seats, which would be quite cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's lovely. Oh, thank you so much, Reese. I just want to say, from Tanya Communication Doctor and Reese Thomas, adios.
Thank you.
My takeaways from this show was looking at Rhys's principles: consciousness, connection, co-creation, curiosity, community, creativity. I was curious to learn more about Rhys's journey, and in this podcast I feel I did, from grief to success to ups and downs to emotional intelligence and coping, finding a coping mechanism to deal with everything that else is going on around him, but also using mindfulness in a really positive way to work with his clients and also to live his life in that way. His love for yoga, his love for mindfulness, his love for self. Thank you for listening.